And we go to the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline and welcome in Mo Egger of Cincy 1530 ESPN. How you doing today?
I'm good. What's going on?
Nothing much, man. Doing a little training camp, live at training camp, watching practice that just concluded. And really wanted to talk to you about today specifically and get into the AFC North and specifically the Cincinnati Bengals. You know, they come off a year where Marvin Lewis is no longer there. It's the first time in a long time for that organization. They bring in Zach Taylor, just turned 36. What are you expecting from Zach Taylor and the differences to look from Marvin Lewis and Zach Taylor going into this season?
Well, I think it's a good question, and I think anybody who's attempting to answer that with any amount of certainty, I think is just kind of making it up. You know, we don't know. He's never been a head coach at any level in the National Football League. He's never been a coordinator in the National Football League. He's called plays at the University of Cincinnati for 1 year. Their staff is, at least, you know, for the coaches in the current roles they're in, pretty short on experience. And so, you know, I think it's going to be interesting to see how a new staff meshes with what is pretty much the same group of players. I expect there to be some pretty sharp departures from Marvin Lewis. I think this is going to be a team that, from an offensive standpoint, is maybe a little bit more aggressive. From a philosophical standpoint, is maybe going to be a little bit more aggressive in terms of, you know, managing the game and things like that. I think one of the biggest differences is something that fans aren't going to see on Sundays. I think this team is going to practice differently. I think this team is, I think Marvin over the years has really kind of failed to adopt to sort of the more modern ways of preparing a team. They were going at it full bore on Wednesdays and Thursdays, at least within the limits of the CBA. I think that's going to change a little bit. I think it's going to be, you know, interesting to see how this team differs from Marvin, given the fact that this head coach has an offensive background and is going to call his own plays. And Marvin came from the defensive side of the ball and, you know, really was, just in terms of overall philosophies, not the most aggressive offensive mind. But it's interesting. I mean, look, they've sent a clear message, the Bengals have, this offseason, that they don't think the players were the problem. Again, they brought back pretty much every major player from the last 3 years, minus Vontaze Burfict. And they're simply hoping that a group of guys that over the last 3 years have underachieved is going to figure out a way to do better with a new and younger and different head coach.
We're talking to Mo Egger of 1530 ESPN in Cincinnati, and he's on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. And in terms of the offseason, really big blow losing you know, their number one draft pick in Jonah Williams as far as with the injury. Were you surprised that the Bengals went offensive line early in the draft? And how do you expect the team to kind of, you know, bounce back from that as far as losing a guy early in camp?
Well, I wasn't surprised they took Jonah Williams. Now, I think it would have been interesting to see, you know, what would have happened if Devin Bush would have been there, because this team's biggest and most glaring need is linebacker. Mm-hmm. And so I think, you know, if you were to jot down at the beginning of the preseason a list of Bengals priorities from, you know, highest priority to lowest, I think upgrading that position in the draft is probably one that would have been at the top of the list. But offensive line's been a problem on this team for 3 years. You know, they let Andrew Whitworth get away, you know, went to the Los Angeles Rams at the end of the 2016 season. You know, obviously fans in Cleveland saw Kevin Zeitler for a couple of years. He was a big part of this offensive line back in the middle of the decade when the Bengals, you know, had good teams. So, yeah, you know, when things fell the way they did in the draft, you know, I'll be honest with you, my preference would have been to take Dwayne Haskins, because I think you have to start thinking about life beyond Andy Dalton. Mm. But given this team's needs, the fact that they went offensive line in the first round for a second consecutive year, I think was hardly a surprise. And you're right, the Jonah Williams injury has opened up a series of questions. Not just that, but their left guard for the last 8 years, Clint Bowling, retired. So, you know, the initial plan was put Jonah Williams at left tackle, slide Cordy Glenn to guard, and then hope that a bunch of guys from last year's offensive line were going to be able to play better with some different coaching. And now you don't have the guy that was the centerpiece of your offseason. You have to put Glenn back at left tackle. You've got an open competition for a job at left guard. Billy Price, the kid from Ohio State they drafted last year, was not very good as a rookie, and he dealt with injuries. They drafted Michael Jordan from Ohio State in the fourth round. I think they project him as a guy that could help sooner rather than later. They brought back Bobby Hart, their right tackle, and that was a puzzling move, I think, for a lot of fans, because Bobby Hart has never been a good NFL player, and he certainly wasn't last year in his first season in Cincinnati. So, yeah, you know, look, if you can keep Andy upright and you can, you know, give Joe Mixon lanes to block, this offense can take off. It starts with those guys up front, and, you know, even if they end up being okay, they're going to start week one against the Seattle Seahawks with an offensive line that is not the group that they envisioned back in April.
You know, when you look at it, I'll kind of save Andy Dalton for last, and because that's the biggest question mark in my mind and a lot of fans' mind as to what the Bengals do at that position moving forward. Another guy that I'm puzzled that I thought was going to be a really good acquisition for you guys, John Ross, speedster. I thought he was going to be able to do some things and work underneath and really bring a level of explosiveness on that roster. He's had injuries, of course, and he really hasn't really jumped onto the scene. What do you expect from him in regards to that?
It's a huge year for him. Year three for any first-round pick who has had a poor first two seasons is an enormous season. You know, he's obviously playing for that fifth-year option. And he's been massively underwhelming. I don't know if there's a player on this team who stands to benefit from a different coaching staff than John Ross, because it's my belief that Marvin Lewis was not on board with drafting him. And, you know, if you go back to John Ross's first year, the second game of the season, John Ross commits a fumble and Marvin Lewis benches him. A couple of weeks later, he runs the wrong route in the game. Marvin Lewis benches him. It just kind of felt like that first year. John can never get out of Marvin's doghouse. And year two, you know, he caught seven touchdown passes. He was really good inside the 20. And so, you know, you're hoping that you can build on that and expand his role. I'm not sure the previous coaching staff really could figure out how to use him. And, you know, let's be honest, John Ross has, I think, shown some deficiencies in terms of work ethic. You know, I've talked to people who have said, look, on this team where you got A.J. Green, just follow his example. And John sort of, you know, thought maybe he had all the answers on his own. So this is a huge year for him. And I think if they can figure out a way to – look, it's not like with the wide receivers they have, it's not like you need John Ross to catch 90 passes, but he's got to be a factor in this offense. I think he can be a factor in this offense. But, you know, again, among the many mysteries on this team – how good John Ross is and specifically what his role could be is obviously on the list.
One of the guys, and we're talking to Mo Egger, 1530 Cincinnati ESPN, and this is on the Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram hotline. We looked at a couple guys who really did step up. One of those guys is Tyler Boyd. I was really impressed with him. I liked him coming out of college. I think he's become a really good player. Do you think he has the makings of a number one receiver, you know, coming in footsteps after A.J. Green?
No. And I think the fact that Tyler Boyd signed a deal that is along the lines of most of the good number two wide receivers in the game tells you that Tyler Boyd knows he's a number two. Now, you know, if you go into a game and A.J. Green is, you know, for whatever reason not available, and that's been a problem the last couple of years, and, you know, you have to slide Tyler into a position where maybe he's featured a little bit more prominently, I think you can get by. But I certainly don't believe that moving forward, the Cincinnati Bengals are ever going to go into a season thinking that Tyler Boyd is their number one guy. And that's not a knock on Tyler. He had a very good year last year, 1,000 yards working out of the slot, you know, coming off a second season where he was often a healthy scratch. He was not very good in year two. And it earned him a four-year, $43 million contract extension that he signed this week. So, you know, that's financially, that's kind of along the lines of where good number two wide receivers are. And you could do with the amount of attention that A.J. Green is going to get, and if this team is healthy, with the amount of weapons they have that can do things that defenses have to account for, Tyler Boyd can have a number of really productive seasons in this offense. And I think he just started to scratch the surface last year, but you know, getting back to your original question, I think Tyler would be the first to admit there's limitations to his game. You know, he is not one of these guys that had a big year last year and thought, you know what, I'm going to go be a number one somewhere. You can make a good living and have a good career being a number two, especially in the short term, while A.J. Green is still this team's number one.
Well, you look at it, and before we let you go, I guess we get to the big picture. The big question is, you got Andy Dalton. And, a couple years ago, he was a guy that people had mentioned as far as an MVP-type candidate because he was playing so well. Last year, of course, he had the injury. Some people maybe wanted to go in a different direction as far as quarterback moving forward with this team, seeing that you guys still do have weapons like Joe Mixon going over 1,100, almost 1,200 yards, A.J. Green still being able to produce at that level. A lot of people questioned what's going on with Andy Dalton. Where do you see Andy Dalton this year and his ceiling and the overall ceiling for what this team can be in the division?
I think the ceiling for Andy is pretty well established. You know, this is not a guy going into year three. He's been around for 8 years. And I do think there's an element of intrigue about, you know, what can a more offensive-minded head coach, maybe a little bit more aggressive head coach, get out of Andy Dalton. But let's be real. It's not like Andy Dalton in his ninth season is going to turn into Andrew Luck. You know, I mean, his physical skill set is well established. Who he is as a person is pretty much well established. So, you know, in 2015, he had a very good season. And there's a lot to that. Number one, they had a great offensive line. Number two, they had immensely good health, at least ironically, until Andy Dalton got hurt. That season, I mean, heck, we're reading injury reports in November, and there's literally nobody on them. So he had A.J. Green, Marvin Jones, Mohamed Sanu, Giovanni Bernard was second on the team in yards from scrimmage. It was the only healthy season Tyler Eifert has had. He was one of the best red zone targets in the National Football League. And so that was probably as good as Andy is ever going to be. 25 touchdowns, 7 picks before he got hurt. He was great. That occurred under a series of circumstances that I think are really hard to replicate. Every other season, he's fine. He's a fine player. I think the big question for this franchise moving forward is how much do you value him? And for me, you know, I was on board with the Bengals taking a good hard look at drafting Dwayne Haskins, and it has less to do with liking or not liking Andy Dalton. It has more to do with how much do I want to pay him? You know, we've all seen what's happening with the quarterback market. Dak Prescott might get a $35 million deal. Look at him statistically. Dak Prescott's not that much different than Andy. He obviously is younger. And he obviously doesn't have as many seasons under his belt, but I think it illustrates how much money it's going to cost to keep Andy, whose deal is up beyond the 2020 season. And if I'm Andy Dalton, I'm looking at Kirk Cousins and I'm looking at Nick Foles and I'm looking at some of these guys who are not exponentially better than me. The beauty of Andy for all these years has been he has been working under an exceptionally team-friendly contract. The Bengals can let him go every March and not have to pay anything. And so, you know, a lot has changed in this league and a lot has changed in the quarterback market over the last 5 years since he signed that contract. So what are you going to do with him long term? If he has a big season, I think there's a really good chance they sign him. But at what expense? How much are you willing to pay for a quarterback who's good but not great? The money he's making now is good but not great. He's like the 21st highest paid quarterback in the league. So I do think they've got to ask themselves, how much are we willing to pay this guy and who are we willing to say goodbye to because we decided to give a quarterback who is good but not great a significantly higher chunk of our payroll. And so they didn't take a quarterback in the first round. They drafted one in the fourth round in Ryan Finley. I don't really believe they project him as being the long-term answer. But I think that's the biggest question facing this franchise. How does this season impact what they do with Andy, and if they decide to move on, what's plan B? Because as much as I don't think this team has a chance of being really good, I certainly don't think they're going to be awful. You know, as bad as the Bengals have been the last 3 years, they've never drafted higher than ninth in any of the last three drafts. So if you're going to get a Tua Tagovailoa, you got to go 2-14. They're not going to go 2-14. They're frankly, I think Andy Dalton prevents them from doing that. So I think they're in a spot where, you've got to use this season to really figure out, you know, how much of a fit, how good of a fit is Andy in Zach Taylor's offense, and you know what really are you willing to commit to him for you know, maybe the rest of his career, and you know, how's that going to impact your ability to retain talent elsewhere? I don't think there's any more pressing question facing the Cincinnati Bengals right now.
All right, Mo, I thank you very much. Great insight on the Bengals. We look forward to you, and hopefully we can get a chance to chat during the season as well.
Anytime. You got my number.
All right, thank you. I appreciate it, man. I appreciate that. That was Mo Egger of ESPN 1530 in Cincinnati on the North Olmsted Chrysler Jeep Dodge Ram Hotline.